Hi, welcome back to the Ryle Books Podcast. We're super excited to be able to share the recording of an evening of readings by poet and activist scholar Nat Raha and novelist Suleiman Adonia. The event took place at our space in Brussels on the 7th of December 2024. Nat Raha read excerpts from her most recent book, Apparitions Nines, and Suleiman Adonia invited Simon Asensio to read an excerpt from his novel, The Seers. The evening concluded with a conversation between the two authors. Amidst the violence of capitalism and state and imperial power, there is Nat Raha's Apparitions Nines, in its charred golden mini-dress, ushering us into a space of grief and resistance. The embodiment and intimacy of queer, trans, and diasporic black and brown people. Written as a series of niners, a poetic form consisting of nine-syllable lines, Apparitions Nines is at once a brash and subversive rejoiner to the Anglophone sonnet, as well as an ode to beauty, collectivity, and tenderness, which emerges from and far surpasses constraint. Dr. Nat Raha is a poet and activist scholar whose previous books of poetry include Of Sirens, Bodies, and Fault Lines, Countersonnets, and Octet. Her work has appeared in 100 Queer Poems, We Want It All, an anthology of radical trans poetics, Liberating the Canon, an anthology of innovative literature, and Transgender Studies Quarterly, amongst others. With Maaike van der Drift, she co-edits the Radical Trans Feminism zine and co-authored articles for Social Text, The New Feminist Literary Studies, and the book Trans Femme Futures, Abolitionist Ethics for Trans Feminist Worlds. Nat completed her PhD in Queer Marxism at the University of Sussex and is a lecturer in Fine Art Critical Studies at the Glasgow School of Art. Suleiman Adonia's The Seers follows the first weeks of a homeless Eritrean refugee in London, set around a foster home in Kilburn and in the squares of Bloomsbury, where its protagonist Hannah sleeps. The novel grapples with how agency is given to the sexual lives of refugees, insisting that the erotic and intimate side of life is as much a part of someone's story as land and nations are. Suleiman Adonia is a British, Eritrean, Ethiopian author based in Belgium. His novels, The Consequences of Love and Silence is My Mother Tongue, have been translated into more than 20 languages. Silence is My Mother Tongue was a finalist for the 2021 Lambda Literary Awards, the Firecracker Awards, and the African Literary Award from the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. He currently lives in Brussels, where he has launched a creative writing academy for refugees and asylum seekers, as well as the Asmara Addis Literary Festival in Exile. In 2021, he was awarded Belgium's Golden Afro Art Prize for Literature, and in 2022, he was elected a Fellow of the Royal Society of Literature. We hope you enjoy the recording. Thanks for tuning in.
Can you hear me? Yeah? Is that good? Okay, I just can't hear myself, so that's exciting. Thanks, Sven and Chloe and Absentia, and thanks for having me. I'm going to read Having Us. Also, this is a real treat to be in dialogue with Suleiman and to be hearing his work. I'm going to read long, so it'll maybe be half an hour, maybe a little longer. I haven't timed it because I had a last minute thought to try and read some kind of some work from my previous book as well, Of Sirens, Body and Fault Lines, which is quite London-y. So we'll get there. Because I thought we could have a talk about London, like the crazy Londoners that we all were, past tense. But this poem is after Diane de Prima. I read it this week. The planet will not bear it. Not just the material and ballistics, the decimation of Gaza, of Palestinian life, of every infrastructure cinders to starving, the future as vortex burning fictions, the violent metabolic of nations. Not just the $17.9 billion sales to arm the genocide, not just the desire for power, the $200 million presidential campaign, for others to live by your will. Tiny empires to own land and river and ocean and air. Not just no kings, but drag kings. Not just by the creations of capital. Every activity a form of sale, dispensing the imagination. Not just all of that, but perhaps to our attachments, feeling seated deep in forms, progress, liberty, reason, received forms of beauty, rights, and of even hope, life and the human after the human. Release the ideals and structures by which empire continues to believe in itself. Again, we are after humanity as we, the colonized, have known it. Are you willing, without fathers or family, existing by alternate hand, solidarity, mothering, learning without ownership, to grasp and hold each other in the deep particulars of strangers, in the even after the law? Do you know where to source strength and purpose, animate yourself between cater walls, the external, and all of your contacts? We are going to make everything. What is in the way to live free? Thanks. Okay, some old poems. Siren of the body, broadcast contented from its fault line in the norm, dogmatic amidst its private sphere and clamped in stupid shoops, affirmed, articulated, broadcast evenings of relations offered, assured universal citizen amidst its private sphere and clamped in stupid shoops,
speech to
affirmed,
ideal sourced on the precarity of the present day wage authorized
affirmed.
Sleep thought material ideal sourced on the precarity of the present day wage ideal sourced on the precarity of the present day
make capital gains
ideal source
in the survival of winter. Approach Choke New Crossroads diagnostic 151.2 micrograms per meter cube PM10 filth pack occupational assessed and redundant and repetitive self round three sirens old Kent unmarked 939 0.6% growth in the spring
ideal
who is objects and subjects of recovery historicalize the city of Westminster, the kernel of dispossession, ideal source. In fever dream, landscape conceptual, beauty of the gentry, visions, cities, light, skyscraping flesh, we inhabited in former decades. Continental drifts, sails, claim bodies and souls. Here, in the present, hydration seeds flesh electric. The passage of future, or cut out the stars. Muscles wire horizontal, emit vague, dull and desolation. The basis of utterance, while the muscle tissue diverges.
Such a alluded circulations, and syncopated on the precarity of the as the mouth alluded circulations, embodiment and the demands of the day. In his
future black time, short clips and glitches, the precarity of the peasant, centigrade,
our presence in the city, historical odds, the most racist electric, perimeters of work and restrictures, education, les frontières quotidiennes, distant futures or extractions, rent day and terror, externalized English fear, just shh, aura. Deptford High Street, 10:22 a.m., multi-agency, unmarked galaxy, SE59 XER, flanked by three officers, left onto New Cross Road, returns in the opposite direction, turns left onto Florence Road, the material and immaterial border. Anxieties our keep us sun deficient, marking on held fabric sweetness, break tense into knowing, out of where, under schooling nights, collapse anxiety into active form, hunger into improvisation. That fear bred by law and capital newsprint, phrase nerve only in our cellulose, taken daily to pave, ages downward, spectral to the bullet for any black person, state sanctioned and delivered as just. Sphere of such notions, dispossessing the rational with the cuff threat to our friends. Shh, of officer cognitions, that this death does not exist in our borders. Elevations of possible violence within the solidarity and not the baton and cell. That the mass arrest here is not for profiles, racialized with the white cop, minority against. Black and brown youth, our breathe, inflect resounds fierce, feminine. That the guilty particular resounds determinate negations of cognitive blood of the British state since 2001, 1981, 1757, 1562, tends our separations by culture, by the knife at skin. What momentarily we crashed, still Regent and Oxford streets, Brooklyn Bridge, FDR Drive, Route 508, the flaming economy of Ferguson, as our don't shoot and bodies break the Whitehall fear charge of riot bans, December 2014.
Cool. I'm gonna read from this new book, Apparitions. These poems are all niners, which is this contemporary form invented by my kind of closest comrade in poetry, this poet named Mendoza. And they're all, so all the poems are nine lines long and they all have a nine syllable line. Yeah, and it's a book of 81 poems. For if you're following along, I'm going to read the first nine poems and then I'm going to read from across the middle and then I'm going to read the second final section. Right.
Of this obscure cosmos, violence reiterated, vivid pores blood in fire and synthetics, silver and liquid, eyes stenciled brick, quote, as authors who could not conceive us and hold to have lived, impossible gravity, chilled and all known ways. Decimate, unmade and horny, our shaven flesh and locks, dined on black beans, corn and sugar, vagabonds, tinkers, tricksters and jailbirds, had demanded our bodies, oh, fascist rags, codes and division, systematic flesh and capitals. Nostalgia imposed and gender-ivative nations, soil. Agree, Your logic, treacherous, political and philosophic, distribution of thought and active, itty engineered, divestment, hot policing and exotic. But some of us want to keep our jobs. In your demand that we flesh, nice for being and pills had abolished your entitlements, our... Sexes and fleshes constituted from the women and femmes who charged you, pale and sweating majorities, pathetic smears and intonations, assured, arrogant thieves. If your violence a source of pleasure, we trust our anxious days and juts where once bridges, borders, decline, winter, bones, gorgeous, warm. Girl, if we are citizens of nowhere, a threat to the tone and image, composed, cute lace, we divine femmes know here to dissect your impositions, so late in the day, bark organs, in casual violence, your pleasure, excruciate living, and the beauty about our eyelines. This decade-old violence for bored stars in black salt, she said the possible diminished order administered names. Ha and solstice-eyed fall into the wage day, turbulent shimmer, out of discourse traded, close pinned, ordinary trappings and verse to squat. Dislocate. In nationhood, your reveries, 500 truncated years, we dined on stolen whiskey, tar, ministerial bones, forced to find work, a rustic allegory, regen, narrating cities and aggressions, light and false nature conditioned, cohered by skins, our separated. Crashed, lit. At trial, your crimes of invention, in my charred gold mini dress, cremated homes, debt and circuits, capital commission and hate, dined on flour, divine salt and threads of your flags, aroused, our vulgar comedy, drives and erotics, silence, beliefs, and rituals disintegrating. We impossible siblings, lobes sore, close hairs and gleaming, our traumas dismissed, bitter salt stream in cheeks spark, structurally, your lavish, sheerest divisions, devaluations, institute, ions, blood, harmonics of work, migration and conjugal flicker, track memory. And hold, to have live, nostalgia abolished in your flags, our aroused. From the women and femmes who charged. Bull diminished. 500 truncated years. Cute lace. Bred through dutiful us, a similar metropole and reorder. Remain awake. Sign transient. You are bare hands and freezing. Rex talents, glam our flakes, girl, forget the legible, inclusive and undiminished, eating twice a day, fucking against the national interest. This is with lines from Frank O'Hara's Homosexuality. It's 3.6, if you want the line.
And down the lengthening shadow, divine ones fuse streets with the forms of beauty to be. In the creopole, dragged up centuries, lust seared, wilding the nature of light. Switched out, served abjection, squatted for heat and harmonics, weight borne against her body. Delve out of prescriptions, vacuum, split, polyphonic, lips resolute, activated, synthetic, musing bodies, reversing the monoculture. Its clocks belie us in easy fiction, emergent, dizzying, dusk shards hanging our animate lives of the present. It's 5.2. In the hyperreal of this beauty, this swear, fashion bodily, dyke beings, bitch smeared color sink, such potential faggotry, the shades pressed to you, or a gorgeous priest. Tend change of use, anthropos, in your blessed vulnerability. Remember what we live. Twitching in the dream, our gazettes, archives, den, rose, hip, flesh, delicate. Fledge creopartan sleeve stitched fragility bear, what waking calls skin, tended, strapped, feminized, assembled, type our scattered belonging, written, isolated, disappear.
Divine ones, girls.
Coarse edges, ecstatic, dissolved with love. Oh, pen, soul, all eyes, generosity. We gossip as daggers, as tender, as chiffon. We feed as commune, sneak laughter, lust across borders, here hysterical. Our insolent freedom, armed with rigorous loving, sleeve stitched fragility bear. From the women and femmes who charged. Given we have outlived your sen. Ten sis of death, life, and deportation, given your sentiment to exile, undermining status, history, every truth another match, every lived future dynamite. Our laughter beats audacious, blown culture, police lines, unsounding British gravity. Wretched atmospheric fear, volatile mirrors and hatred, your storms of occupation, hillsides, water and temples, dividing heat, bodies and minds, the food from our real mouths, commodities, millions set spells to eviscerate, weapons and obstructions. And yet, future not in waiting, tearing roofs off weapons factories, calling in rain, spell against occupations, drive a wedge in economics of maiming, borders, displacement, bitter centuries we've survived, orbits germinate, deject empires, swollen gravity. Okay, this is the eighth section of the book. If you want to, it's page 87. It's this is nice. I can see this. I'm like, haha. I says, after Jose Esteban Munoz's the sense of brown organization, harsh indignation of houses, our trappings and displacement, vacancies, movements, crossing belts and bridges, intensive hope, unit, care, emergent cries, to line under skin and soul, tasked to touch the space of sensation, dynamic, dynamite. Left little of what nutrition, hazel kernel, cocoa dusk right, relation, reveal hands, in depths, pleasure, brown, somatic. Thawed out, turn up soil, in spirit, accrued, ancestral, known, re-woke in the day's longest, say it, feel music in your eyes, rain, and the hardest truths, necks, eased, auburn, in the woods, bears the grief, loss we leave our friends by, future groove, longing in queer. You're located, California fingers. A single trace of study, aged oak, surrounded by apartments we used to live. And girl, who are you to abandon the beautiful jettison ways of being, pursed on edge, on song, speed, surf, ace, divine, tuned, luxurious, the earliest known sensations, adorned, silk woven, learning your rhythm from canvas, lubrication for your soul. Inaugurate our futures. In the face of the wrecking of our lives, suffocation, naive liberal optimism, admissions, given your occupation of land, our thoughts and centuries, stolen hands and appendages, die-cut water and oxygen, axing the health in the nation. Oh, tragic national consensus, tearing continental flows, classify, evidence, carbon, date, pulled up medieval bones, an all-inspirited life. We will exercise your explorations from all land, ocean, all your orders and abstractions. The disappeared will live. Justice is a practice to unfold, reverse the future, turn the truth up from soil, in the everyday, compelled, all that crashes with pandemic, all that's held against need. And after our affections, dozed regressive histories, bloom alternate truths. In sparse winters, our death, apartments crushed beside, bare we now all is our breathing. Friend, what is left for us? Dance effluvial prospects. Friend, walk the flood toward beacons, lunar ascendant. Decomposers overrun the remainder of vibrant streets. Before the world's tribunal. And if the crisis in your method of inhabiting the earth diminish future scope, our refusal of ways, orientations of hours and days, body, minds, and souls. All empires have known how to save are their heads. Roused, longing, decomposes, overrun, storms, fragility bare, surf, ace. From the women and femmes who charged, earliest known sensation. Before the world's we tribunal, commune, 500 sneak trinket, isolated, unsounded, divine ones,
fusing everyday down the legible, thawed out and hold,
turn to up have live, soil,
not in spirit.
Thanks.
Can come up. Should we trade? Yeah.
Hello. So I'm gonna read some excerpt that we picked together. Yeah.
Is it good?
Yes. Yeah. It's good for me. Do you hear me okay? Yeah, okay. My mother gave birth to me in Cairn. But I rebirthed myself in London that spring night as I topped Bina Balozzi on the bench in Fitzroy Square. It was as if a lantern was attached to the tip of my strap-on so that I entered him. I saw my reflection in a world inside him that was unfamiliar and familiar, beautiful and disturbing, disruptive and reaffirming. Hannah, Bina Balozzi screamed my name. I've never felt more present, surrendering as I did to my sexual power, inflating the force of my desire to breathe inside him with new ways of seeing and being seen. The O on Bina Balozzi's backside opened like a rosebud in the middle of the night. O, Bina Balozzi, the fragrance of my garden. O, B, B. It poured. Bina B opened his umbrella. Behind him, the pink roses of the gated Fitzroy Square garden swayed. My eyes swooped to his lips as if taking an evening promenade on the bank of his breeze-filled mouth. Oh, Bina, Bibi stepped forward. Anna, here. He offered me his umbrella. I declined. It's you who makes me wet, I wanted to tell him as I examined his face under the street lamp's light. He was as smooth as the night, free of bitter thoughts. His plump lips and exfoliated skin, his eyes cooled by the charcoals mined from my dark thoughts. His cheekbones like summer birds about to fly with him through the black rain. Bina Balozzi stretched his arm and raised the umbrella further. The dark, slim-fitting suit he wore to our date imprisoned his bones, and I imagined my fingers like mowers freeing his body to my anger, his flesh to the invasion of my mind. My thoughts were running amok inside my head on this night of lust when Bina B coughed, then talked. Anna, I want this, but it's not easy. I pulled up the collar of my trench coat and lit a cigarette. I took a long drag and watched the rain. Anna, do you understand me? Bibi asked. We spend a lifetime trying to conform to ideas handed down to us, I wanted to say to him. Let's instead build our own reality that reflects the ideas we birth in our imaginations, because imaginations are genderless wombs. Instead, I said, Bina B, the time for explanation is over for me. I have nothing to add to the struggle. I flicked the cigarette butt on the ground. The wind brought the screeching of cars, the distant barking of dogs, and the sirens of police cars. The sound of a city in conflict with itself reminded me of my own conflicts in the past. Bina B paced up and down. He seemed like an orchestra without instruments, a city without people, a river without fish. I longed to enter him and enter myself inside him like a bookmark inside a book. We lived in the shadow of exile, in the shadow of empty promises, in homes made of cardboard stands, in nations drawn on sand. Peace, future, made sense only in our heads. Come to me, Bibi, I mumbled. Come. I was getting ahead of myself, my passion like a fast car speeding with me through this new terrain. Intoxicated by his gasps, I was out of control. For a second, I wanted to wrap him in my arms, to inveigle him into opening his body to my ravenousness. Then, and after a moment of calm, I sought to persuade him gently instead, to guide him to this moment with care, show him that if I could penetrate him, I would find a forgotten world inside him that he could then see mirrored in my eyes. But in truth, it felt as if our souls had already touched on the waiting lane refugees go through in this country, that he and I had rubbed shoulders in the files at the home office containing our stories, where we lay naked of meaning and dignity, broken, adrift, not here, not there. Yes, I thought, we did cross paths and held hands, touching each other through our stories. No persuading was needed. I ached to know him as he lived back home, not carrying a tale of an immigrant, but a boy growing up to be a man with the qualities of his mother. The trees of Fitzroy Square creaked and groaned, a choir as exquisite as the voice of an Eritrean praise singer. Bibi's shadow was thrown against the buildings overlooking the square, as if he was part of the Victorian architecture. It struck me how I had likened all my lovers to lands, to places, as if my search for home had eroded the boundaries between my body and the country, so that the two had merged to make sense only when my desires were fully intact and in action. I extended my arm towards Bibi to bring him to me, to end my quest once and for all. Bina B looked at me in silence. My thoughts intensified. Why can't we love without questions? Why do we have to convince him that our desires are as beautiful as our skin color? Why do I have to coax him to my thighs as if I were a hunter? Even the way we want to love has to be negotiated in the same way we sought asylum in this country, our fate hanging on a matter of believability. Yet, what is there to believe or not to believe about us? Two immigrants standing here in the heart of Bloomsbury, in the depth of the night, pretending that we are a myth.
Cool.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. Welcome to Brussels.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well,
thanks. It's
so good to see you.
It's nice. It's really great we to have meet.
We have to moderate each other, so we have to be in. You know, it's. Yeah. First of all, I just want to apologize about my voice. I was telling Nat actually that I've not been well. I've cancelled everything this week, last week. But I couldn't cancel this one. Honestly, I've known you, via Instagram, and you know, you've just been really kind. And so when you actually suggested my name, I was like incredibly excited. So yeah, thank you, and it's really amazing to see you in person. How are you?
How am I? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm loud, aren't I? Am I loud? I'm like quite, I'm feeling the energy after having just read for 30 minutes. I'm also just like actually quite overjoyed to me. Sorry, everyone. I was saying to Sylvan, I I'm new to your work, and as in I encountered the Seers in June, just I guess the week it's published. I was in London at the Queer Bookshop, and I was saying it's like a bookshop that's been really central in my life. And I think on the one hand, thinking about the responding as a reader, I guess, to the setting, to like Bloomsbury as this kind of like queer space of literature, and also like of this kind of like romantic idea of what London can be, which I lived in London for many years. I decided to read some of these kind of London poems tonight, thinking about this. I don't live there anymore, but it also being a space that I kind of entered with this like romantic idea of what a city could do or could be, which was also like the queer experience of like running away to the city and being like, oh, I have to go and I have to be in this place in order to find a way to exist or to live. Mm. And then next to that, so that's like a personal connection, but then next, and it goes deeper. I actually used to work on Fitzroy Square. This is a long story. But then also just being like feeling really so moved by the, not just the like the erotics of the text. And I don't just mean in terms of it as a work that is deeply erotic and that your writing is like uncompromising in its eroticism, but also in terms of like how that actually feeds the dynamism with which you write here, especially. And it feels quite different. I was saying I just read Silence as well. And it's like such a different, it's got like a different kind of energy, a different pacing. And yeah. So I was like, this, I guess there's two, questions. I was like, two questions, maybe. One is maybe about this, which just came up in this section that what we just heard about in the text you're talking about how you think about is Hannah's relationship to place actually the same as one would relate to a lover? And then thinking about, and then I was thinking about like London next to say the refugee camp in which Silence is My Mother Tongue is set. Rambling. If you could talk about that a little bit about like, because it's almost like London is the lover that we all kind of have.
Yeah.
And we might fall out with or have these ruptures with.
Do you actually miss London now? Because you've been away for about how many years?
Sorry, this gets really personal fast. I've been away 8 years.
8 years, yeah.
I left 8 years ago. The poems that I read were kind of like at the cusp of, on the one hand, being involved in a political community and activist community. Actually, the last poem I read was really directly kind of trying to capture some of these feelings around the like BLM demos in the winter of 2014. And, you know, we were out marching in the streets like nights like this. But I find that I've been going back to London a lot this year in particular because I'm like, oh, the city has something that I'm missing in my life. Mm. And I have to like, and that's actually really about the erotics of the city. And the kind of community making that's happening.
Yeah.
But how about you? Do you miss that? How did you? Also, because if you're writing, I was like, you're writing, sat on a bench and Ixie is writing this.
Yeah. No, I mean, in terms of like going back to that question you asked about space in the city, I think because I've moved around like for so many times when I was younger that I felt over times, I got to a point in my life where when people ask me where is home, I've just kind of like, I started kind of like condensing this idea of home to a feeling rather to a landscape, rather to a particular, you know, kind of concrete jungle or anything like that. So I always say like home is like a moment in my life. So I don't feel at home in a place. I feel home in moments. Like, you know, when you're having fun, when you're having sex, when you're, you know, when you're going out with friends, when you're having coffee or you're reading a poetry. So this idea of how the whole kind of identity distills itself, or it kind of, it's a concept that is constantly reimagined in my mind.
And so it's maybe like the expert, like a priority of it as experience or because I spent a lot of time, I think, in trying to like tarry my own sense of home with diasporic experience, you know, and it's like, and then I think also with this like Brexit Britain thing where it's like you increasingly don't want to be British actually, and you're increasingly invited to not be British anymore.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, I was born in the UK, it's like, come on. But thinking about home as relational and it being as like, oh, it's something that I'm sharing with people.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of, a sense of home exists because I'm in relation with you. And it's like, oh yeah, we have it's a form of feminist community and belonging. And I started thinking about this as like queer diasporic feminism. What does it mean? Actually, our home might be about our relationships with our friends. Mm. And that might not be, that can be transcontinental even, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe all of that is because I fell out of love with the city. You know, it's like, oh wow, I love this place, but it's literally killing us. And
you mean a city and as a
I mean state, the economic struggle and feeling all of our health diminish, you know, and there's so much where I'm like, our health, you know. And there's like one of the poems I read actually has this, the two things I started recording was the pollution.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of, I have a science degree from UCL. Let's just say that. I'm obsessed with this like sense of the pollution and thinking about it as like, what's happened to our lungs, right? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And I'm stood next to the pollution meter whilst I'm waiting for the bus every morning on this one street in Southeast London, which is New Cross Road. It keeps getting referenced in the poems. And then I'm recording every time an unmarked police car drives by and like the number plate and the time. And it just became like the thing that I was doing whilst I was waiting for the bus. And that all ended up in this book.
Wow.
And then as an inn of sirens, that's the siren, right? And then... I don't know. And it felt like it became increasingly impossible and became the reason, you know, the reasons I left was like, oh, we have to find a way to live. And like some of it is literally like thinking, worried about the healthcare infrastructure and the, what's the way to describe it? The divestment in the NHS and, you know, and being with people in my life where healthcare really mattered for us and to not have the idea of not having healthcare was life threatening. And that's like as disabled folks, as trans and queer folks. And then being like, okay, so maybe I do need some other idea of home because I was really stuck in this idea of being the Londoner, you know, that we're all Londoners and everyone's a Londoner. Yeah. My brother, who's older than me, he's a Londoner.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of wanted to be a Londoner. And there's a scene at the end of the field book where you're like, everyone's at a party. We're like, we're all Londoners. Hey, like literally.
to be a Londoner, you know, before like aspiring to become British.
Cool.
Yeah. It just felt like it's, I don't know why. I mean, I think like, you know, especially for black and brown people in London, they don't venture out too much.
No.
You know, and that's because of that kind of history of going, you know, that kind of, fear in some cases of going to the countryside and things like that. So you end up associating a whole country to a city, basically.
And not even, I was like, not even the countryside, also the towns,
or
right?
The towns or some places,
I mean, we're like People's Republic of South London. That was like, it's literally we're like People's Republic of South London. Because it's like, oh, you go to South London, it's like global majority. And it's like, oh yeah, this is actually... And that's where, again, but then I'm like, oh, that's where I felt at home. That's where I had a sense of belonging. But then I'm back in this spatial sense of that rather than trying to work more poetically and like where belonging could exist. And then that also is about like, because it's like a power thing as well, right? If home is between us and is in these moments, in these encounters, then we actually have the power to make home like that. It's not dependent on if you're permitted to stay. Or if you have leave to remain or whatever.
Exactly.
And
that's the beauty about being a writer or a poet, I guess. In that, like, you really end up being influenced a lot by your characters. In my case, I would say, like, I write my books, but I really often get rewritten by my books. You know, the way I think, the way You know, like Hannah and Saba, they're quite different characters, and Hagos and things like that. And, you know, with Hannah in the Seers, for example, I love kind of like that wild energy that just like, you know, this fearless, this fearless notion of actually taking, you know, identifying things like sex, for example, and that's a way to kind of belong. And so I was wondering, actually, in your poems, you have like,
I could ask you a question too, but you go.
Do you have like in your poetry, are there like poems or things you associate with a poem that actually rewrite you in a way, or you come back to it and you say to yourself, you know what, I was really influenced by that piece? Or
I can definitely think of it in other people's writing, because that feels kind of clear when where a poem gives you something or tells you something that is going to change your relationship to the world, not just your perspective, like your relationship to the world and how you live. And I'm like, other writers who've done that for me are like Sean Bonney, who's one of the people I dedicated Apparitions to, who's like a close friend of mine. And another writer, Verity Spott, whose book's over there. They're both writers who are like, oh, sometimes the poems tell you something that is like, oh, but maybe that's like receiving information. And I don't know, I think there's something about actually, so sometimes it's on the page, but sometimes it's also in the reading and getting to inhabit. I think about it as like, oh, it's like inhabiting the poem. And I really try and think about this question, like what it means to create a sonic space that we all kind of get to inhabit, and then trying to get to inhabit that myself when I'm not just having to read it, say the words one after the other. I don't know. I think it's more like there's something about how poetic thinking, and we were talking, I'm going to ask you a question about writing as well, but there's something about how when you're writing, you stumble into something happens in the moment of writing that might reveal something that you don't know about how you think or about how you create or how you put ideas out. Thank you. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I stumble into an idea that becomes a theory like later. And, you know, I also write kind of theory. I'm trying to own this, write theory, write essay, and being like, oh, actually this idea, like I have this whole idea about queer and trans social reproduction. And this poem, that idea actually came out from a poem that's in Of Sirens called When We're Working While We're Asleep. And it's just trying to be like, oh, actually sometimes the poem, something happens in the poem that expresses something, or there's an idea in there that hasn't previously existed in my brain. Or like in the, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I should spend some more time thinking about that. Because poetry is really fast as well, right? Like when you're writing theory or any kind of essay, you have to really sit and meditate and think about what you're doing. Like, because when you're writing poems, like the poem just happens. And you're like, okay, here's the poem. Obviously there's craft and, you know, it's like many years of writing to get to that. But yeah, for me, that's the kind of thing that I'm like, maybe that's where a change happens on the page.
Yeah.
And is that something, what else do I want to say? I think also then trying to let, because sometimes it's like also, if you stumble into a kind of existential truth.
Yeah.
And then you got to be like, okay, how am I actually going to live by that existential truth? Sometimes it's like, maybe it's even like if you write something political, it's like, this is going to feel like posturing unless I actually step up to what I'm suggesting as possible. Because that's part of it. It's like, if there's there's a utopian project, but then it's like the dreaming is like a thing that can be made concrete, right? Mm-hmm. I think about this a lot from what Jackie Wang writes. It's like, actually this stuff matters if we actually make it our lives, because poetry is life, actually. We were talking about this already, like it's a mode of living. It's not just about writing things down, it's also about a way of engaging with the world.
So you live your poetry.
I try to live poetry. Okay, so now I have two questions. But I may go with the first one. How about you? How I was thinking about Hannah's character as on the one hand, like she's super driven. She's also kind of like confined in her own ways.
Yeah.
But she's in her erotic pursuit. I was thinking about her as a character who's like ethically, she's like beyond the pale in a good way. That she like makes us question if we should have feelings about what she does and doesn't do, and when and why she does her those things. Could you talk about like writing her?
I don't remember writing her.
Yeah, even better.
You know, like, it's so funny because I was telling Nat before when we got talking, like, I was actually at the time, I was writing a completely different book, book of essays, and it was 2020 during the lockdown. I write in cafes basically, and they closed my cafe, and so I was like in a panic mode because I thought that's it, my career is over. You know, honestly,
talk about spatial relationship to what you do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you know, I've done everything in cafes, you know. Then one day I just went for a walk. I stood in front of Ponds of Excel, which is really beautiful. Well, some people think that, but I find it beautiful. a name came to me, and I thought, like, that's really, so I took out my iPhone, and then the first sentence came, and I thought, interesting. And then I was just gone, and I was just like, I've completely surrendered to her, you know, in ways I have not, I think, surrendered to any other characters before in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that's when I realized I entered this kind of writing from the subconscious territory. Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's what I've been striving to do all my writing life career. Like, I've just wanted to write from the subconscious, because that's where I feel like true art lies, where you kind of like, you fade as a person and you're giving complete control to your imagination. Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember writing this book.
Amazing.
I really don't, you know. It just came, and then I kind of like I had to deal with it. And, you know, and I was like, wow. So it was so interesting. You know, it's like, and that's why I find it so difficult to talk about this book. I've done a lot of events, and it's like not easy to tell, because they ask you, like, why you've done that. Do you have that with
you? No, so I'm like, wait, I've got another. Because I'm like, is it also, because you're talking about characters changing. I was like, queer literature, we can just go here, right? Like, is it also because Hannah's a top? Like, there's something in her approach which is not just about what she does in the bedroom, or not the bedroom, on the bench, in the park, in public, where she's like, her like sexual prowess is also, and that's also a thing about like, like tops, right? When you're like, okay, like you kind of have to, I don't want to just say submit because it's a bit too easy, but you kind of have to let them have their way,
way. I've never thought about it in that way.
I wonder.
That's so interesting.
You know, topped by
it's
Hannah.
Like, yeah. Well, I don't know. It's like, you know, because I haven't had a chance to think about her in that way. Like, I haven't had a chance to think about, you know, to think even about the structure of a book. Mm-hmm. So it's a one paragraph book, and then you don't think about this. I just didn't have any. But, you know, then you analyze, or people start analyzing. Do you analyze your own poems afterwards?
No. I mean, I sometimes have to close read them. I mean, editing.
Editing, yeah.
It's different.
But do you... So, because I was thinking, like, whether you have a similar approach in terms of, like, when you write a poem, do you... Are there moments where you withdraw and you just let your imagination...
So Apparitions, because all the poems are really short, I actually wrote a lot of them when I was basically asleep. Wow. And I would write a lot in the period when I'm falling asleep, or when I've just, before I'm waking up. I actually do a lot of my thinking in that kind of space now. So I'm like half asleep. I'm writing by hand. I'd write in pencil in like a notebook next to my bed. A really great method if people want. You'd have a notebook. If you write in pencil, you can write at any angle. Make sure you can grab your pencil. And, you know, sometimes you write stuff and it's like, oh, I can't decipher this. You know, if you're not very good at writing in your sleep, you've got bad luck. And then since then, I was going to read it. I had a longer poem that I didn't read because I was like, oh, I've already read for half an hour. Amazing. some of the things I've written more recently, it's just been like, just felt really kind of moved, a point of almost crisis, and being like, okay, I just have to write. Like, I wrote this poem in November last year around the, about trying to respond to what was happening with the genocide in Gaza. And it's just like, oh, you know, you feel so profoundly like affected by trying to make sense of like these questions, you know, and also these questions around like what poetry is for or what poetry can do in the, during a genocide. And that being really clear, actually, feeling quite clear to me and feeling like, oh, I actually appreciate that I have that clarity. And then just writing, you know, I wrote this like 5-page poem in like two hours, basically, this kind of thing. And you're just, and I'm trying to just write more like that, just let it go. Like, yeah, I was going to read this poem called Philadelphia, which I wrote in Philadelphia a couple months ago. And had the same thing. I was just like in a gallery looking at this work, and I just wrote for an hour.
So it just like
it came, just happened. Just it was happened. Like I just went to see this poem's called Philadelphia. Yeah. It's a long poem. It's about Zoe Leonard's artwork, which is called Strange Fruit. And if I'd read the poem, you would know all this. So it's 295 pieces of fruit that she'd eaten and sewn back together. Yeah. And it was made kind of between 1992 and 1997 during the AIDS crisis. And she was talking a lot about how it's her reflection on the death of David Wojnarowicz, who was like a friend of hers, who's an incredible queer artist, writer, painter, photographer, painter, who died of AIDS. And so the work's kind of been decaying, but it also survives. And there's this weird contradiction in this. And I just was there and we're just like writing the poem. And then you're in a gallery, so stuff starts happening in the gallery. You know, people come in and there's literally like some people exclaimed like, what the hell is that? And it's like, that's in the poem. And then like some other people started coming and hanging out and we start talking about the work. And yeah, and just trying to write all of that through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like those poems have a different kind of energy and people respond to them differently. I see that. And it's kind of way, it's slightly, that poem in particular, and also this poem Shields, which I wrote about the genocide, is like, they have a long line. They're a bit easier to kind of grasp syntactically. So maybe that also helps. But I was like, oh, it's minimal editing. It's just like, just here. You know, like 5 pages written.
Why is it minimal editing?
I don't know. It just feels that way. They feel like a bit more urgent. And then I'm like, oh, I'm doing a reading. I better read. Like I read that poem in Philadelphia and then I read it like 5 days later in Edinburgh when we launched Apparitions. It's just like, here's something fresh. It's that like wanting, because it's an urgent time, right? It's like, and when I say I feel like really, please, I'm really pleased to be a poet in this moment. Like, it's really clear that poetry has something to say about the kinds of truths of experience that, you know, in this moment where it feels like not only humanity, but like all of these liberal institutions are like failing to stop a genocide. Mm-hmm. And for those of us who are engaged with anti-colonial criticism, this is obvious.
Yeah.
But for everyone else, it's like, oh, wow, like Western humanism is over.
Yeah.
And if we keep believing it's not over, the same things are just going to keep happening because this is already a weird replay of the 40s, right? And yeah, so I don't know. So it feels that poetry can like say something in these moments and it's really clear and it's something about the form and the urgency of this kind of writing that allows for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe, can I ask you on that question, thinking about this idea of the seers?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think a lot about, like I sit a lot with Rambo, like deregulation, derangement of the senses. And I was also thinking about this kind of comes up in Fanon, the program of absolute disorder as what anti-colonialism does as well. But in the sense of like the queerness of this, of like, oh, there's something about when the internal is this, when there's an internal struggle and that reveals, mode of perceiving or of understanding the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a little bit about the idea of the seers in this, like the seer as a thing?
Oh, actually, funny enough, when I left London for Brussels, I've actually come from London with a book, a biography on Rambo.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's in the Edmund White. Maybe.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I think it's that one. So I was kind of like going it's really bad insomnia, like sleeping 2 hours a night those days. So I was just spending my nights dancing and reading poetry.
Nice.
And then, yeah, and watching Pino Bausch, you know, and listening to Cesaria Evora. So, you know, I had like a few artists who were like, they were like my family, you know, at night.
Wait, listening to, did you say
Cesaria Evora? From France? No. Quevert, yeah.
Quevert,
yeah. But she lived in Paris, yeah. Oh, okay. and then one of the books I was reading at the time, so I'm looking at the bookshelf. No. I'm just giving an example because I was sitting those days on, I had a chair, and one day I looked up and I saw one of the books that I came with from London, and it was Rimbaud. So that became, you know, a book that I was kind of reading slowly, you know. So I was like, and I think the title must have come from there. You know, the seers, when he wrote that letters about seeing. But I think there's something amazing about reading poetry in the middle of the night, you know, where or just being by yourself in the middle of the night, a lot of things reveal, both, you know, you kind of encounter thoughts and ideas that you probably had by day, but when you encounter those same thoughts and ideas by night, they're completely different. I don't know in what way, but it just felt like there's that dynamic between day and night. It was kind of like really important to me to kind of like, I think that's when I've changed as a writer. You know, I was suffering because I was going through not much sleep at all. But I think that's when, you know, I was kind of like experimenting with ideas, including sexuality, including thoughts, including feelings, including your relationships with any and everything becomes like part of that kind of night lab. And that's, I think, and that's why I came out, I'm feeling like a lot bolder as a writer, where I don't really give a fuck where people are going to read my books or not. You know, it's just about being really true to your, you know, like I say, surrender into your imagination. That's my entire practice as a writer. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's, to me, that's the only thing I know, is that I feed my imagination and then I withdraw. Do you have something similar?
Feed your imagination and then you withdraw and your imagination runs by. I wish I could, like, you know, it's like, it's like when you, as the aspirational surrealist, I don't know if I would describe myself as that, but maybe I hang out with people maybe there are people whose work I admire that really does tap into that true sense of surrealism. I say hang out, maybe I mean like hang out with their books or hang out with their paintings. And yeah, maybe sometimes my problem is I feel like it's almost like if you're too wordy, you're kind of too caught up in language as a spoken thing. Or something. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Can you try to explain again?
No, that's, I'm not so sure I can explain. No.
But can you? Okay, let's. Okay.
But then I'm like, I feel you with that. Yeah. I was like, oh, the night. Yeah. I live, Edinburgh gets dark at 3 at this time of day, right? Time of year. And we talk about it as city of night, and the whole ambience of the city is really different. But it's, maybe there's something also about the spiritual that exists that you can tap into in that time, and this, like, yeah.
And also, like, when you read poets who are kind of different to you in every sense, and or you think anyway, and I think you enter that world, and you enter, you know, and so that becomes your world, especially at night when everything is silent, you know, in your own room. And I think that's the kind of, that's why I probably love a lot. I love reading more poems than books, prose, because it's just this kind of immediacy, where kind of immediate, you know, it's transportation into a kind of unfamiliar world or familiar world. It just feels like you are in a grip of somebody else and you're being guided and you experience that. And so it's almost like, you know, at times it becomes like, I don't know, taking something and It just
I'm like, it sounds like being topped.
Well, I don't know. It just feels like, really, you know. But yeah, it just feels, there's power of depth about it that it's not easy to convey, especially when you're sick. So, yeah. I think for me, the sea is really, it is a kind of like consequences of those nights where I was just like a student following a lot of masters, you know, Nawala Sa'dawi, you know, the Egyptian feminist, or, you know, like just Latin American literature, Japan avant-garde literature, which became really a love affair of mine. So I was just everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was just like giving my pieces of, I felt like really totally fragmented in that sense. And I think, you know, and I always think after that, I just felt like maybe you need fragmentation as a writer. It's just a question. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So fragmentation. Yeah. I find that like, okay, so I can think about apparitions. Like, I think there's something, you know, working with this form where all the poems are like square, kind of, sometimes they're quite square. They're less, I mean, I say that, but I'm like, the other work is fragmented, but big and not square and condensed. There's something in the kind of synthesis that comes through fragmentation of putting different pieces together. And with apparitions, it felt like when we were editing the book, I was working with an editor, with Gia Gonzalez, who was working for Nightbear at the time. And like, sometimes you've just got these two pieces, right? And the poem's kind of like this. There's like something happening in the first bit, and then there's something happening in the second, and then it's over.
Oh, yeah.
And then, and prior to that, I kind of literally been working in this more collagistic mode where the poems are like they're like that, right?
Wow.
Like, and trying to cut up and thinking about using the cut up as an editing process and using collage and bringing in, I was really just trying to bring in noise from the city and be like, how do I get that onto the page? And then realizing that actually maybe partly how I write is this, like sometimes the image isn't super clear. And actually I think this is like this relationship, it's actually like about my relationship with lyric. And so when I was writing this book, I really like, I feel like I began as a lyric poet, and by the end I'm completely destroyed. Wow. And lyric is like impossible. And that's something to do with like the reflection of the kind of experience that we're trying to get down. And that's the London destroying us, right? Question. Yeah. And now I've like made it back to lyric, like many years later, you know, you're like, you can go through some process, some stuff happens in your life. You feel like you want to write lyric. And yeah, and lyric kind of doesn't necessarily, so it's like, fragmentation and lyric as these two kind of ends of these pulling, being pulled in these different directions at different times.
Right.
And also at times literally just being like, this is not the time for lyric, you know.
Yeah.
Lyric can't capture the things that I feel I need to express.
Yeah.
And there are other times where it's like, oh, actually lyric is like this really generous, loving mode of writing, and maybe I want to give that to the put that into the world, because sometimes you want to put good life-affirming things into the world.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
By the way, if you have any questions, please.
Sorry.
Let's any make questions? It interactive.
Hi, thanks for listening.
Don't hesitate.
Ask,
be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. You mentioned before that sometimes when you write, you stumble upon an existential truth and you wonder like what to do with this or how to live by this. I was wondering if you could give an example of such a truth, or were you thinking of something in particular when you mentioned that?
I guess I can think of like particular lines. Yeah, I mean, I was really thinking about this. The example I keep coming back to is there's a poem in here called When We're Working While We're Asleep. And it's really just like, it is quite an intimate, it's quite lyrical. And it's just this idea of like, oh, what does it mean to be thinking about these questions of labor and care, like in these moments of intimacy and affection, you know? And it's literally the kind of like, you're awake in the middle, you're like stirring in the middle of night. It's one of those kind of poems. And then, and that becoming like actually quite a key theoretical idea for me in my life and for the people around me. And, you know, that we're trying to, you know, we're in this like rereading Marxist feminism. I'm looking at Nina because we're like the Marxist feminist crew. And like, actually, these ideas become how we start understanding the things that we do for each other and how we understand what we might think of as like just like the everyday living, but also solidarity, kind of these two ends of these things. So on the one hand, these acts of care are solidarity, and on the other, they're part of some kind of everyday communal or collective mode of living. And that also goes too far, so far, because actually people are like, oh, when you start calling everything a form of work, that's actually not great either. Because then you just start thinking of everything through this logic of work, which capitalism obviously has a pretty big monopoly on. And although, you know, I'm not going to undermine Marxist feminism in a response to your question. But then also being like, I think just trying to also use the poem as a space to reflect like what's happening. Like the poem I wrote this week that I read at the start, I'm literally just trying to be like, what does it mean to, maybe we need to release some of these ideals that we live by? And I've been thinking about this a little bit just the past couple of weeks, being like, maybe these things have to go, you know, reason, sure, we can get rid of reason. We, you know, that's on the bonfire of the, you know, the liberal the bonfire of enlightenment. But what about some of these other things like progress, also bonfire of enlightenment, but like, maybe there are deeper seated things that we need to think through. And just, I don't know, I was just trying to capture that in that poem, but maybe, what do I want to say? I'm just like, if this reading was longer, I would just read another poem. But yeah, that actually sometimes it's like you just figure things out in the writing because of that mode of thinking. I think of like poetic thinking does something else, or something else is happening in that space. That, yeah, is because you can't like, what do I want to say? You've got to kind of let it flow, and you can't like, there's no room for doubt. Or if you let doubt in, it's going to preoccupy that space. And so maybe, yeah, sometimes maybe you just have to express, things just emerge that you're like, okay, I have to deal with this now. You know, like you were saying, I think as well. I don't know if that's useful, if that's just quite rambly. Thanks for that question.
Have you always been a poet?
Is that the question?
You wanted to ask that question.
Yes, I wanted
to ask. Great, right, mind reading.
But I'm sure you can ask it in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, I was always creative. I was playing music. Music was like my space. I wrote loads of songs. I was writing music all the time, all through my teens. And then, but like poetry, I didn't read a lot as a kid. Like I keep being like, oh, the libraries in the towns I lived in were closed or something like this. And I only found literature like kind of, I was doing a science degree, already said this. And in the middle, I kind of found literature, and then I kind of encountered contemporary poetry in this like experimental way. And it so happened that the people who led me to this and the people who I'd met were also like queer and trans. And so it felt like, it was like, oh, this is a weird, there's like this whole type of writing that has a subcultural life that is familiar from other subcultures. And then simultaneously being like, oh, cool, we can, like everything's up for grabs. Nothing, like poetry is not this like stuff. It's not just the thing we studied at school. It can be any kind of be anything. And then I just started writing. I was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to... But I mean, I was interested in lyric, and I'd read a few poems before that, but I'd never been encouraged to write poetry in this way. And I kind of had to find it for myself, or find it because my friends are like, here's let's go read some... And it's literally like, I met my best friend at a demonstration.
In London?
Yeah, okay, this is quite a good story. Who's Mendoza, who's the person who invented the niner?
Okay.
We met at a demonstration against this LGBT NGO called Stonewall.
Oh yeah.
And we were demonstrating against them because at the time, this is in 2008, they were giving a TERF a journalism award. And it was like the biggest trans demo that had taken place in London at that time.
In 2008?
2008. Wow. And I just met this person in the bar, you know, afterwards. We were talking, and we became like, we just started chatting. We became friends. They introduced me to poetry. Yeah, and they were studying poetry at the time. And their Mendoza's writing is quite different from mine. We've collaborated a lot, but they use found text. They work quite strongly with dialect. They're really interested in history, like Northumbrian history in particular. It's like where they're from. And then but it's this question around like poetry as a way of life. and being like, there's just a point where it's like, oh, can poetry be a form of life? Because it's like, if you commit creatively to an art form, it's, and it's also like, poetry is also just like the aptitude of how we engage with the world. And I think those two things, and just having those, having a few years where it's like, okay, poetry is the thing. And here I am in Brussels talking to you like 15 years later.
Yeah. So, but when did you start calling yourself a poet?
Like probably around then. Like I was really? Like 21. Okay. I was finishing my science degree and I just started writing. And I was just like, the writing's just happening. You're just writing all the time. Yeah.
Amazing.
And you, how did you, okay, so here's the question back to you. So, because I was like, oh, so you studied economics and then development.
Yeah, which is a waste of 3 years.
But how did you find literature? No, how did literature become the thing being like, I can write fiction and this can be the thing that I do?
I have no idea. I think it was, I went to UCL, did economics. Then I went to SOAS, did master in development studies.
Wait, what years? What years were you there? Like come on.
2001.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah.
And then I actually stayed at the university and I did, worked as a, in a research center. So I kind of like got promoted, became a researcher at university. And then I got promoted to become the deputy head of a center.
Cool.
And so the day before.
Is it SOAS?
Yeah, SOAS. Cool, yeah. Yeah. So the day before I got the, so I got the, you know, the offer. And then the morning after, I just resigned because I wanted to go and write. Because I don't know why my partner to this day, she kind of like, she was mad at me. Because it was like, well, you know, I got like, finally, you know, I've kind of like got this amazing, I was going to have amazing wages. And, you know, and then I just threw everything away. It's just the instinct. I just had something inside me that told me I'm not going to be happy if I...
Yeah.
So it was a big risk. I just left and I didn't even know what writing... I mean, I didn't even know how to write a short story. I didn't even know, you know, what you need to write a story. So I just went to... I don't know if you know, there used to be a bookshop called Borders. Borders, I think. So I just went there and I took like, okay, characters. So I was there the whole day reading about
how to write
a character.
It was a good bookshop to hang out in.
Yeah, and I just like, I wrote a short story. It took a long time. I think still I'm not, you know, my partner still thinks like it's still the wrong decision. She's still not convinced it was the right one, but you know, but I'm kind of like, but yeah, going back to this, because I've always been surrounded by tellers, you know, like people who love stories, you know, in different forms, like oral storytellers. Mm-hmm. So the story is like been part of my life, like anyone here. Since my childhood. So, you know, although I'm like you, like, I mean, I've kind of like not been, I mean, I've always read books, but not like heavily. I'm not kind of I wasn't an avid reader as a child. I just was busy doing other things, you know, surviving and things like that. But I think, and that's why I would say, like, those kind of situations really teach you to read the world in a different way, you know, to become a reader in a different way, you know, to have kind of relationships with people, with books, with ideas in a different way. And I think, you know, and that's why I love literature when it's diverse, because then you encounter people and books with different perspectives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel the same? I mean,
Yeah. And I think a lot about the just like, you know, it's winter. It's like my winter plan is always like, I'm just going to be at home with my books and my cats.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just going to cook some food, see some friends. And it's actually like, there's like a sense of belonging and travel that exists in literature, you know? And also to be like, oh, I'm really grateful for that because literature gives us so much also.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even with the always rereading, it's like, oh, you get, things keep coming back to you. Yeah. And I think a lot about that. Actually, I feel like I live by very few, a small number of writers, but actually that's more generative than living by many writers, say. But yeah.
I actually wanted to ask, when you were reading, I had like one question, your relationship with the letter S.
Yeah.
Can you say a bit about that? like
the letter S. Yeah. Oh, was it a particular poem or just in general?
I think in general, you had it quite
a lot of S's. Yeah, sound. There's, I was thinking about those S's because there's one poem which is a poem that's kind of written after the burial of my friend, Callie Gardner, who's also was an incredible writer. And thinking a lot about, I spent a lot of time grieving in the botanical gardens in Edinburgh around these sequoia trees. So S, yeah. What? And I have a close friend who's also named Sequoia, and she'd never seen a sequoia until we went to meet the sequoias in. And she's American, so we went to meet the sequoias in Edinburgh because she lives there. And yeah, I think maybe it's just something about I'm like sound sirens, you know. I'm just like gonna but like silence, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there are particular patternings that emerge.
Yeah.
I did this thing where we did the. We wrote a list index of first lines, which was like my idea at the end of the book. You know, lots of poetry, you have an index of first lines. In contemporary poetry, you don't get this so much. If I look at it, I realize that there are certain letters that I begin poems with. Like I always knew I used in as the first word of a poem loads, but actually not so many S's. Maybe more than nine, yeah. 12. But yeah, I don't know. It became this fun, like, oh, there are certain letters, there are certain words I don't begin poems with, you know, because that's like, where does the thought begin?
Okay.
And wretched okay. of, yeah, something, yeah.
Is there kind of a different relationship when you write poetry?
No, I'm just like, is the S in my brain?
S, yeah.
There you go.
I'm sure you've noticed it, right?
I think this is me sounding self-critical a little bit, but hey, run with it. Sometimes the writing is better when I'm really thinking about how the words do sound. And when I was writing of Sirens, I was really thinking about these questions of noise. I was listening to loads of music that just had loads of noise and distortion and feedback. And there's something in there about, it encourages you to think about the resonance of the words that you're hearing and then trying to work with that. And that's part of the matter of the poem, especially when, you know, I'm like going to get up and read the poem. So I know it's like happening in that space. Yeah. But maybe sometimes you lose that, especially if you're like, oh, political urgency, go, like the poem has to say something now, you know, like it's a crisis, not a crisis, but it's like, you can go deeper.
Anyone? Oh. Remember, she came all the way from Scotland, right?
With London, that dynamic. And what's your relationship with the cities you live in now?
Yeah.
Very good question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about that. I was like, should I go see the bench? Should I go somewhere? It's like Sunday.
Oh, there was a bench. You
know, go see the bench.
It's like. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like, it took me so many years to kind of like. I still miss London. I still like. Feel like one day I'll end up going back to London. No. Yeah, I know. No. I just feel it. Like, I don't know why, but I just feel it. But it took me a long time to like Brussels. And I think I only started to like Brussels. When I started to, you know, the Spanish poet Lorca, you know, he talks a lot about loss in a city, and that's, you know, when he says things like, you know, you have to lose yourself, I'm paraphrasing obviously, to lose yourself in order to discover the light within. And I think that's when I discovered, when I kind of reinterpreted Brussels, or kind of reread Brussels in a different way, when I found peace with myself, or I found, not peace, but yeah, I started to kind of go internally in order for me to see the external world. Do you see what I mean? Like, kind of like now I feel okay here, you know? I mean, it's my place. It's like, I feel like I belong to Brussels through culture and art and literature, because I found it, you know, things like a festival. We just did our sixth edition last weekend, you know, so it feels like I've been part of the city, you know, in so many ways. And, you know, people belong to spaces in so many ways. And mine was just through literature and through kind of like creating a space for other artists to come and speak and, you know, for myself to listen and, you know, a community and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I live in Edinburgh and I work in Glasgow. So I'm kind of between these two cities. And maybe I guess I have a sense of belonging that's manifest through activism and community building through that. Yeah. Some of that's been around trans healthcare, some of that is around Palestine solidarity. I feel like Scotland has this particular kind of xenophobia, which is people are nice to you, but they're being xenophobic. One of my other friends, who's also a writer, Josie Giles, she talks about it as insidious niceness. So people are being really nice for this. And it's basically in the like, oh, where are you from? You're brown and you don't sound Scottish, so you're not from here. So where are you from? But friendly. And then being like, oh, the other question is like, when are you leaving? You know? That's the question they don't ask, right? When are you leaving? And so kind of having internalized that in a way that I never really experienced before. I don't know if that says something about my state of mind. But then the way to deal with that was to try and write about the histories of the places through this anti-colonial lens and be like, actually, what does it mean to try and retell and re-narrate these places through this understanding that actually Scotland is deeply implicated in colonialism in its own ways? Because before it was like, oh, we were colonized by the English. It's like, it turns out you also colonizers. And also not being alone in that, having, especially in the arts, like there's a lot of black and brown artists and historians working through some of the questions. And so also trying to respond in my writing with that, to that. Maybe because that was, I also felt if like London is like, Of Sirens is really like the London book, right? And then I left in the middle of it. It's like having to find some other subject that isn't just place, because before it was just place could be the whole subject. And yeah, so also having this different kind of relationship. And like on a personal level, it's like, yeah, I'm aware that I'm in a place that isn't always going to meet all of my needs, but also does have these kind of literary and artistic cultures, because it is that kind of city. There is a lot of, you know, there's a long, long history. Edinburgh really thinks of it as a city of literature. I'm assuming you've come to Scotland to read, right? Yeah, you're talking about Lighthouse. And like, on the one hand, it's like there are exciting cultural institutions like Lighthouse. And on the other, there are these bigger kind of, like, you know, it's the Edinburgh International Book Festival, you know, these kind of more monstrous of festivals. Yeah. And trying to find a space in between all of it, amidst it all. Yeah, I don't know. It feels interesting, but then it's like, what things actually manifest a sense of belonging or a sense of attachment or a sense of, like, there's actually a way of life here that is sustaining and nourishing that I can live with. And I'm still not sure that's what I have there. I don't know. Yeah. It just feels like it's less of the subject. Although I'm saying like, it's always there. And there's loads of like really indirect references to the city and to what was happening, especially during the lockdown in this book. Cause I was writing the end of it during the pandemic and, you know, they were like digging up my street. There was this medieval graveyard buried under the sand, under the street. In the sand. Turns out our neighborhood's built on a sand dune. And we're in the port. I live next to the port in Edinburgh. It's just called Leith. It's actually kind of its own town. Yeah. And so all of that stuff's kind of in there. it's like obtuse. It's like obscure. But it's part of the things that are happening in the poems. And you're like, this says something about our understanding of space because it's this ancient medieval city or whatever. You're like, it's
I
weird.
Think, do we, I always feel like, do we need to understand space?
We need to understand
space. Or do we need to feel the space?
I'm not sure. I don't think, definitely not understand.
No.
Feel? What do we get from from feeling it? And in what way do we feel it?
Is, I don't know, because I was wondering whether feeling is a way of seeing.
Yeah, I think it is.
Whether you kind of, when you feel something, then you see it in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I live in Excel, and I was really, you know, I was shocked to discover that actually Excel is like home to more than 140 different nationalities.
Yeah.
you know, so we are a multilingual festival, so we have performances in so many languages. And actually it was that idea of the multilingual was born on Flagey Square, because, you know, I was walking one summer evening and I was hearing all these like pockets of languages, you know, Urdu, Arabic, this, the Italian, Portuguese. And then I thought, like, it would be amazing to just take that whole thing and put it on a stage, you know. And that's what we started to do. We're a segment we started to do. But I felt the reason I'm saying that is because I didn't understand 99% of those languages, but I felt them. So I felt like that was the moment my relationship with Russell kind of started to shift. Because I felt all these languages, and then I felt like, okay, maybe this is my Brussels, you know, something that you feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I'm going to not try and sound really woo as I talk about this. Part of me is like, and we've been talking for ages also, I'm aware, because I've got a watch on Timekeeper. But so sorry.
You're the Timekeeper. Okay.
Yeah. Just trying to build a relation to place. And I have another close friend. We usually go walking, and we're always trying to be like, what is our relationship to the land? And for me also, that became like, what is my relationship to the ocean? And then just kind of tapping into other kinds of like other experiential elements through the presence of the sea and going to the sea and having these kind of like being in the, like a more than human communication, and letting that also kind of influence the work and my writing, and that being the beginning of a lot of my relationship to the space, and being like, okay, I'm here. And then I'm trying to understand, you know, there's this rock that had this lighthouse, has a lighthouse and a prison. It's actually a nature reserve. And I'm also obsessed with birds. And then it's trying to understand the history of that in relation to the history of incarcerations, and then trying to attach that to the things in my life and my family's experience as well, that also kind of feeding that. And that became a whole other work. Yeah. So I don't know. So it's again, like, you have to kind of write, it's writing yourself into the space. Maybe you're like trying to take everything, but or like curatorially, or like you can do that with your pen as well. Yeah. Any final questions, maybe? Otherwise we could go and eat. Thanks all for listening for like so long. Thank you.
No, thank you.
This
so
is
much.
Such a fantastic conversation.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I was like, we could talk for another hour, but I think we should do it over food. Like, I'm really hungry.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know about you. Yeah, why not? And you have to sign my books.
Thank you so
are
much.
Are you free? Do you want to come in? You can come and eat.
Thanks for listening to the Ryle Books podcast. This episode was edited by Roz Del Olmo. You can find more of our past and upcoming events on our website, www.ryle.space.